from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. As I approached mile 23, my right foot was killing me. But I knew I was about to get a huge boost, the cheering section that consisted of family, friends, and supporters of the foundation I was running for. Mile 23, 3.2 to go to complete the New York Marathon. Why in the world was I doing this? Indeed, why are more people running marathons than ever before? What does running tell us about pain and power and the human spirit? The marathon and that last 3.2 after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. 12 days ago, I ran the New York Marathon. There are a lot of reasons why I became a first-time marathoner at the age of 63. But one of the most remarkable things about doing it isn't just how it affects you. It's also how it seems to affect everyone else. There's something about a marathon that seems to make everyone high. Friends and family, colleagues and coworkers, not to mention those tens of thousands of people in New York who don't know you from Adam, but cheer you on just the same. Go, Dave! You're looking good, Dave! Not really true, but validation of tip number one, always put your name on your jersey. So what's going on with this? Why did nearly 500,000 Americans run marathons in the year 2010, nearly double the number that ran a marathon just a decade earlier? Why is running, and running for a really long time, such a powerful and transformative experience? And why do people cheer you on when you do? Long distance running, what it does for the body and the spirit. That's our topic during this hour of Forum. Joining me, Dean Karnazes. He is an ultramarathon runner and the author of many books. His newest one is called Run, 26.2 Stories of Blisters and Bliss. Earlier this year, he completed a run across America in 75 days to promote fitness, especially for young people. Dean, pleasure to have you back on our program.
Thanks for having me run by again.
Yeah. It's great to have you.
Congratulations, too, to you. I mean, yay. Amazing.
Thank you, Dean. Anthony Luke joins us as well. He's Associate Professor of Clinical Orthopedic Surgery at the University of California, San Francisco School of Medicine, Director of the UCSF Human Performance Center, and founder of the Run Safe Injury Prevention Clinic. Dr. Luke, thanks for being with us as well.
Hey, thanks for having me, Dave, and congratulations as well.
I really don't want this to be this self-congratulatory. It's true. It's honestly true, Dean. The reason why we wanted to do this program is that it seems to have this impact on people who watch as well as run. Describe what you think that is.
It's amazing. I mean, New York City that day, because I was there with you, and it's the one day everyone is nice, right? Even the taxi drivers are nice in New York City. And I think running has a unique power to unite people, to bring us together around a common mission. There's so many things in this world that divide us, that tear us apart. I mean, be it race, religion, creed, socioeconomic level, sex. Running is something we all have in common. We can all do it. We can all join together. It's a commonality. And I think there's great power in that.
I have to say, it gave me a different sense of New York. As you're running through, neighborhoods of Brooklyn and Queens and the Bronx and everywhere else, there are all make and manner of people, every race and ethnicity, out cheering for you. It gives you a different sense of that place as a real community.
It's incredible. I mean, I had a rabbi hand me a power bar, and I thought, this thing's been blessed. I got to eat it. I mean, where else but New York, running a marathon? Is that kind of thing going to happen?
Dr. Luke, your thoughts on what it is about running a marathon that seems to not only be transformative for the runner, but transformative for people who are experiencing it on the sidelines?
Well, I think you should be congratulated on this achievement, because that's what it really is. You set yourself a goal, you went through months of training, and you accomplished it. And for that, for my patients and for all the runners that I've had the pleasure to work with, just going through that whole process with them, even if they've come over an injury or something like that, is a great achievement for them. So I think it's something you should be proud of.
Dean Karaness, is something you said once that's stuck with me is that in our culture, we tend to confuse comfort with happiness. Is that part of what running a marathon brings into focus, that achieving something isn't necessarily one and the same as achieving comfort?
I think that's absolutely correct. I think so many people, especially in this economy, have said, what really matters to me? What is important? You know, is it things or is it personal experience and personal growth? And as you saw, training for a marathon requires an inordinate amount of discipline, commitment, sacrifice. There's no shortcuts, right? I mean, there's no path of least resistance. You have to pay your dues. It's hard. And there's not a lot left in our life that's really hard. A marathon is just that. And people are drawn to it. I mean, as you said, the numbers have increased astronomically in the past two decades. And I think the really unique thing is that it's been a great blend of new participants. I mean, when I first got into it, it was just a bunch of guys, you know, us guys, kind of eccentric marathoners. And now, as you saw in New York City, I mean, it's a great mix of all races, men and women. I think for the first time ever last year, more women entered organized marathons than men's. I think half of them were women. It's just a really great celebration of struggle.
The other thing that's interesting, Dr. Luke, is that the most common demographic, at least in New York, and I think this is true generally, are people in their 40s. It's not people in their 20s and 30s. Is that what you see in your clinic? Is it something about approaching midlife that makes people want to go run 26.2 miles?
No, I think you're right. That is probably the growing demographic. It's something that everyone's putting on their bucket list nowadays, that I got to finish that big race, and marathon seems to be the distance that people want to do. And, you know, I definitely think it's something attainable if people train properly and set themselves and, as Dean said, be disciplined and think about the process. I think really almost anyone can complete a marathon.
What are some of the keys to doing this safely, Anthony Luke? Because it is something where sometimes you see people who are participating in long-distance runs like this who it winds up not being a good thing for them physically and probably emotionally and spiritually as well. So what are the keys to preparing for taking on this kind of challenge?
Well, I think some of the keys that I think are really important is just, you know, arming yourself with the right knowledge and really knowing what you're getting into. A lot of people just say, yeah, I'm going to run a marathon. And there's a lot of components to training that people aren't always aware of. And that can be thinking about, you know, your biomechanics, your strength and flexibility, simple things like, you know, what's your footwear, and very importantly, what's your training schedule. I think that's one of the most important areas. And then even good nutrition. Those are all big areas that you got to think about and kind of get as knowledgeable about, and then plan this thing so that you get the best success that you can.
And we'll go through all of those topics that you mentioned over the course of our hour as we welcome your calls to our topic, because one of the things we did want to talk about today is to explore whether or not really anyone can do this. Because you see people running who you think, I wouldn't have thought that person would be running a marathon, but they do. Can anyone run a marathon and run it safely, Dean?
I get that question all the time. And I ran 50 marathons in all 50 U.S. states in 50 straight days. And people say, you know, you're insane. You're gifted. You're different. You're special. You're unique. And I say, no, I'm not. I'm just an average guy. I mean, extremely average, you know, at best. But I think anyone can do it. You have to pay your dues. You have to commit. You have to sacrifice. You have to be passionate about it. But if you are all those things, I really believe anyone can complete a marathon.
And how do you start that process? What's the sort of checklist that you ought to begin to work your way through if you're saying, okay, I'm listening to this program. I think I'd like to do that.
I think that the notion of wanting to do it is the kernel that gets you there. You have to want to do it. You've got to question, why do I want to do this? And say, it's something I want for myself. It's this internal satisfaction, this fulfillment of high achievement that I really want, and I'm going to strive and work for that. I think you'll see a lot of injuries and from people that skimp. You know, that you obviously paid your dues, you trained, you took the necessary preparations and precautions. A lot of people just, oh, I'm going to go run a marathon and think, it's just a marathon. And it can really hurt you. As you probably saw, a lot of people were struggling out there as well, especially toward the 5-6 hour range. A lot of people are really hurting.
How long is the – is there an ideal, Anthony Luke, that you recommend in terms of how long people train? Because there's every training schedule out there imaginable that works you from taking a minimum amount of time on up to 6 months to prepare.
Sure. Like, I think it's very important that runners deciding to do a marathon at least have some experience running. So oftentimes – you're starting at maybe 10 miles a week or 10, 15 miles. And then if you've been doing that for a few weeks normally, then you're probably ready to get into marathon training. And for a beginner, probably the shortest period would be around 4 months. Some of the people that are experienced runners can train for a marathon much quicker, but on average around 4 months minimum.
Add to that, Dean?
Yeah, I mean, my guidance to runners is listen to everyone, follow no one. So like Dr. Luke said, some people, 4 months might be adequate. Others, you know, it might take longer, it might take upwards of a year. I mean, I always say, why don't you try a half marathon, you know, somewhere in that time frame as kind of a quote-unquote training run. So challenge yourself with a half marathon, see how that feels, and, you know, think, could I double that? Is that realistic? But it really depends on the individual.
We can open up our phone lines early this morning because we want to hear your running stories and your questions about whether or not you can prepare for a marathon and what it takes to do that. If you have specific questions about training, about nutrition, about the way in which you have to get ready to do this, you can join us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786, or you can email us at forum@kqed.org or go to our Facebook page and add your comments and questions there. 866-733-6786 if you'd like to pose a question to either Dean Karnazes or Dr. Anthony Luke. I want to come back, Dean Karnazes, to this question of what you get from it. I found, at least in my one-time experience, that there was this pretty extraordinary sense, not just of accomplishment, but this sense of also being able to say, this is something I wanted to do and I did it. But I did it because there were also a lot of people there who were willing to support me. One of the great experiences for me was this sense of community as part of it, not only in those neighborhoods of Brooklyn and Queens, but my friends and family who joined in that support too. There's something about that that's really quite powerful.
Yeah, I mean, I always say, you know, a marathon is not something you do. It's someone you become. It's funny, a race director one time at the start of a very long race, a 100-mile run that I did, said, you know, look around you. The people that you see at this start, when you reach that finish line, you will be a different person for the rest of your life than the person who was standing here at the start of this race. And I think you experienced that. People rally around high achievement and great struggle. Friends and family, maybe they live vicariously through your pain, but it really unites people. It brings people together. They know how challenging it's going to be. And, you know, I've got a great story. I was there when my dad ran the first L.A. Marathon, the inaugural L.A. Marathon. I was just in high school. I'll never forget, he told my mom and I to meet him at mile 20. A marathon is 26.2 miles. He said, you know, when I get to mile 20, I'm going to be really beat up. Tell me I look great and to keep going. Well, he comes running into mile 20. My wife looks at him, my mom looks at him, and she says, honey, you look horrible. Why don't you stop? And I just thought it was the most, you know, impassioned moment. We all kind of laughed, and he was crying and got him to that finish line. But it left a lasting impression upon me just how hard it was for him to do it and how proud he was when he crossed that finish line, how proud all of us were for him.
It's funny. You sort of remember, at least I do, snapshots of the day. You can't really obviously remember all 26.2 miles, but there are snapshots of the day, which I know will always stay with me. And my story about that is at mile 23, where there was a cheering section composed of people who were part of the foundation that I was running to raise money for, the Michael J. Fox Foundation for Parkinson's Research. And not only were my daughter and son-in-law and his parents and best friends who had flown in to surprise me all there cheering me on, but so was Michael J. Fox. And it was at that moment for me that I felt like, this is so worth it, and it is such a feeling of again, it's not so much accomplishment, but completion, if that makes sense.
You know, it's funny. I think when we do these events, we're in a heightened state of awareness because I've run literally hundreds of marathons across the globe, and I remember every single one. I mean, I remember this last New York City marathon as well as I remember the first time I did it back in 2006. So there's something about a heightened state of awareness. It's you. It's the people you meet. It's the experiences you have that just get etched into your brain forever.
Let's hear from some of our listeners and their stories and experiences and questions about what it means to run for a long distance, why it is that that somehow transforms, as Dean Karnazes has observed. There may be limits to the human body, but they're not really limits to the human spirit, and there is something about that experience that we'd like to hear from you describe as well. Let's go first to Michelle, who joins us in Novato. Michelle, go ahead.
Good morning. I am a new runner, and I just wanted to call and give a plug and also a shout-out to other new runners out there. I did the Couch to 5K running program, which is free, available online, and it, as it says, takes you from the couch to being able to do a 5K. It's a 9-week program. I doubled it and did it in 18 weeks because that was better for where I was at with having additional weight and being so new. I was so couch when I started that I couldn't even do the 5-minute warm-up walk, and I just did a sprint triathlon a couple of weekends ago, and I have never run a marathon, but I know that I will run a marathon, and I know that I'll cry when I cross the finish line, because something about these events, being able to accomplish them, just it makes me weepy. I love it. I'm so inspired by everyone, and I would just encourage anyone out there who thinks they cannot do it to start wherever you are and start living your life. So thank you. I'll take any comments offline.
Michelle, well said.
You know, there's something you said in there I think is really important, is have a goal in front of you. A lot of people, you know, it might be the first time in a decade they've even walked around the block. I say sign up for a 5K. Get into a program like Couch to 5K. Sign up 4-6 months down the road. Then send an email blast to your entire email list announcing you're going to do this. And if you really want some motivation, do it for something that's important to you, a charity such as Parkinson's disease or whatever is important to you, and encourage them to contribute to your effort. And that way, when you're feeling really lazy, like, I'm not going to run this afternoon, you know you've got this race coming up, you know that you've told everyone you're going to do it, and it really motivates you to get going.
Anthony Luca, Michelle mentioned that part of her goal was to get in better shape, to lose some weight. It reminds me of a story I heard earlier this morning on KQED Public Radio on the California Report about the amount of obesity that there is in children in our state. And it referenced Fresno County in particular, where the obesity rate is 42% in the county, ironically, that produces more fruits and vegetables than any other county in the world. What do you see at your clinic? What is it that you'd like to encourage in terms of fitness? It doesn't obviously have to be a marathon, but is there something in this topic that also speaks to the sort of broader health concerns that we're facing in this state?
Sure. You know, childhood obesity is an epidemic, and you know, it's affecting our young people as well as we get into adulthood. And, you know, one thing that's really great about running is you're doing something good for yourself, namely exercise. And just encouraging people, whether you want to exercise and set a goal and that'll help motivate you, or, you know, just even just running for exercise and fitness. I think it's just important that we get everybody exercising out there. You know, the American College of Sports Medicine has released a big national campaign, which is Exercise in Medicine. And they want all of the health professionals, you know, everybody related with sports to kind of really promote that message that, you know, as Dean said, you don't have to run a marathon, just run in 5K. And kind of like what Michelle said, she's now running 5K and now she's interested in doing more. And sometimes just getting started is the biggest thing. And then you realize what you're doing is something healthy for yourself.
And Dean Karnazes, that's what you ran across the country for.
It's exactly right. I mean, I stopped at about 2 dozen schools along the way and gave talks to kids. And then they would run out of the gymnasium with me a couple miles down the road, and I'd keep heading east, and they'd turn around and come back. But, you know, it's funny. I serve on Superintendent of Public Instruction Tom Torlakson's on his board for his Healthy California initiative. And he said something to me very interesting. He said, you know, Dean, we just can't legislate kids into fitness. I mean, we can take pop out of school vending machines. We can clean up the school lunch program, but they've got to want it themselves. They have access to all this crud, to video games, everything else. We need to have positive role models in their lives because, let's face it, a lot of their parents aren't so healthy. So that's really what I'm trying to do is inspire kids and energize them to get active.
Got a caller, I think, on a different line here that I want to get queued up if we can. Marcos in Oakland, who wants to ask about that same question. Let me see if I can get you on, Marcos, because you want to ask, I think, about how to get kids involved in running. Marcos, go ahead, please.
Correct. Hi, morning, everybody. I started running when I was maybe 12. My dad was a marathoner, and I did my first marathon when I was 22. And I thought I was old to be doing that. I would have liked to be starting, you know, when I was 17 or 18. Now I have 5. I'm going to do my first 50K in a couple of weeks in San Francisco. And I just want to know, what can we do to get 16-year-olds to be training 18-year-olds? So by the time that they're 25, you know, they've been they have a couple marathons under their belt.
That's an ambitious goal. I imagine you would probably start maybe a tad smaller than that, or Dean, or not.
You know, it's funny. You mentioned an event in San Francisco. It's actually the North Face Endurance Challenge, and I'm the host of that event. So I'll see you there for that 50K, by the way. But, yeah, you'll see at that event, we have a 1K Carno Kids Run, and it's a great way for kids under 12 to have their first 1K on a trail, as well as we have a 5K, a 10K, half marathon, and marathon distance. And like, for instance, my son, who's 14, is running the marathon. So he's running his first marathon at 14, and he kind of stepped into it with a 5K, then a 10K, then a half marathon, and now he's doing a marathon. So having this progression available to more and more kids, I think we'll get more and more kids into the sport.
We also want to be sure to address the health concerns and injury problems that can occur in running, and we have one question on that we'll get to before our break. Charlie in Burlingame, why don't you go ahead with your quick question, if you would, please.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead. You're on, Charlie.
Yeah, I'm a primary care physician for many years, and as far as the health effects of this marathon running, it's quite harmful and it had to any longevity. And I found with in a practical aspect, just brisk walking with interval jogging is your best choice for keeping in good shape and keeping weight down. If you do that for about an hour, it does the trick. And this excessive marathon running, so forth, is really deleterious to the human, the hips and the knees and the ankles, and you get all kinds of arthritis. So,
okay. I'm really glad you called, because it's a really important question to address, and we'd be remiss if we jumped right over it. I'm going to give Dr. Luke a chance to quickly respond, and then we'll take this up after the break. Just have about 30 seconds before we go to our break.
Sure.
But Anthony, Luke.
Sure. It's definitely one of the common kind of concerns that people have about long-distance running. Like, does running cause arthritis? I get asked that all the time. And it's still not clear on that. I mean, we think that, you know, certainly anyone with bad knees, if they run more on that, that could cause a problem. But I've actually done some research looking at MRIs and that certain loads, like just 26 miles, doesn't necessarily structurally change things. And so, like, the jury's still out, but it's not so clear that it's obviously deleterious for health.
We'll take up more of your questions about health concerns in running, who can, who should not, and why it seems to have the impact and power that it does on people who participate. Join us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. We'll take your calls, comments, and questions when we return. This is Forum on KQED. I'm Dave Iverson. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Our topic this hour, running. Running for a really long time. Running a marathon. What it can do for you and perhaps what some of the concerns are if you undertake that sort of challenge. We were picking up on that right before the break. A physician called in who said that really brisk walking is better than running? Some others coming in. What's the risk of having of running if you have osteoporosis? Is it bad for the knees? I'd like to hear from both of you on these questions. Let's deal with the knee question first, because that comes up, Dean Karnesas, all the time.
Yeah, well, I mean, I must say, you know, knock on wood, on the side of my head, I've never had a running-related injury. And, you know, like I've said, I've run hundreds of marathons on all seven continents. So I don't necessarily subscribe to the notion that running a marathon is bad for your joints. If you look at, you know, my peer group, guys that are my age that don't run, I would say that, you know, I am in much, much healthier specimen, both, you know, from a cardiovascular standpoint as well as a joint standpoint. I mean, a lot of them have gone through all kinds of, you know, knee surgeries and back surgeries, and they're on lifelong NSAIDs. I don't even take drugs. I run, you know, 10 to 15 miles a day, and my knees feel just fine. So I don't really think that running is that deleterious to all individuals.
And Dr. Luke, what's the science on this? We do hear conflicting reports. Adam writes in, I constantly hear conflicting reports on this issue, knees. Can you settle this once and for all?
Well, I wish I could settle it. You know, it is one area that I am researching in terms of figuring these questions out. There's a few people across the country, but, you know, it's still unknown. I think, you know, the caller brings in some good points, and we got to be careful that, you know, running does cause more impact. So if you said, well, if I have a cyclist versus a runner, which one's harder on the knees? Then, you know, certainly running, we know that by science, is more impact to the knees. However, if you have a normal knee, you know, at least the MRI studies that we've done here at UCSF doesn't show that there's structural breakdown. And a lot of the other studies looking at, you know, big cohorts of people as they've gone older, the people that were runners and heavy runners didn't have more arthritis than the other population. So you know, why don't you have good knees or something like that has a lot to do, like it's multifactorial. So it's not only running that would lead to that. And as Dean alluded to, there's probably a lot of positive health effects as well with running.
Here's a question about barefoot running. This comes up also very frequently now. Dean Karnesas' popular book, Born to Run, about barefoot running. What are your comments on barefoot running and barefoot running techniques? I'm a past cross-country runner who really fell in love with running again after using the barefoot technique.
You know, I've been a lifelong subscriber to barefoot running. I mean, I remember when I was in high school, I used to run from our college, our high school, down to the beach, which is about a mile away, and our cross-country coaches have us stash our shoes in the bushes and run barefoot on the soft sand. And then when we got back to the infield of the track on the grass, we'd run barefoot again. So I've always been a big proponent of minimalist, you know, barefoot and minimalist running. Now, that said, I don't think that we're engineered to run on pavement or asphalt barefoot. And I see, you know, once in a while, people running marathons on the road barefoot. I would say that that's probably not a good practice. But certainly looking at your footwear, if you visit the UCSF Human Performance Lab, they've got some great analytics. I mean, they'll put you on a treadmill. They've got a 3D camera, that system that they'll use to look at your natural gait, your natural foot strike. And then when you get into a pair of running shoes with a thick, you know, slab of EVA under the heel, they'll see if you shift to this heel toe, you know, striking with your heel and then rolling off your toe, which puts a lot of strain on micromuscles and your joints and ligaments. And you know, I've been through that program a couple times at UCSF, and it's really been telling.
Here's a comment from Art, who writes in, also recommending the Born to Run book, which is about barefoot running. And then he goes on to say, I'm 68. I've been running all my life. It's an act of joy and freedom. I think it's a mistake to think that marathons are the goal. Just run. Archie writes in, my dad completed his first marathon in San Francisco at the age of 65 in 3 hours and 43 minutes. That's annoying. It was exciting for the whole family involved in training. Enough of that.
He's dead now, but he cracked 4 hours. Yeah.
Here's Bill, who writes in, I'm 71. In my 50s and early 60s, I ran quite a few marathons, including Boston in 2000. I'm not the fastest, but my best time is 3 hours and 38 minutes. That's annoying, too. We need to hear from some people who ran in 5 hours. That's what I want to hear. Let's go to Joan next in San Francisco. Don't be annoying, Joan. Joan, go ahead. Are you with us? Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, you're on the air.
Okay. My name is Joan. I'm in a tunnel right now, but I'll come out of it if you can hear me a little bit. I've run over 40 marathons. I was in my 40s. I was a nationally ranked marathoner. My name is Joan Reinhart Reese. I was lucky enough in Sacramento, this was in the 80s, to have a coach who really decided his name was George Parrott, and he took care of women. He taught us really how to run marathons, and that led to my 7 marathons under 3 hours. My strength was my endurance, and I ended up going to longer distances, 50 milers, and I was the first 50-year-old to complete the Western States 100 miler. The thing I would say to people is the training program is absolutely crucial. You've got to work up to the marathon, and really some good advice is important. And the second thing is, and I learned this unfortunately too late, is to run as much as you can on dirt, because it's so much kinder to the knees and the body. Right now I jog, I'm a big cyclist, but I no longer run marathons. I'm 74 now.
Okay, Joan, thank you. Great story. Thanks for sharing that with us, and congratulations on your many marathons and many accomplishments. Dean?
It's an honor having you on. She's a legend, so fantastic. She hits upon something I think is really important, and that is running on quote-unquote natural surfaces versus running on road. And that's one area of growth within a sub-area of growth within running is running off-road. I really, really encourage people to get off-road, especially here in the Bay Area. We have so many tremendous trails. It really evens the load out. It's much more forgiving on your joints and your knees. So running on natural surfaces is something I really recommend.
Do you second that, Dr. Luke? And what else are sort of common pitfalls that people ought to think about as they begin training programs?
Well, yeah, I think the fact training in different settings is really important, like running on the road, running off surfaces, especially if you do have knee problems, because the surface, the hardness of the surface does make a difference. And just doing different activities, like even going to play soccer and cross training or doing light weights, I think that's one of the common things that I see in runners that they just love to run, and that's all they do. And you work certain muscles, but you miss working other ones. And some of those other muscles can be pretty important in terms of especially like hip strength and some of your calf muscles. Those will be important for getting good biomechanics as you run.
It's a good point. I mean, I wasn't as good about cross training as I probably should have been. But is that something you also stress, Dean, that you need to do as much as you might not want to? Core strengthening exercises, stretching, doing things on an elliptical or cycling or other things besides just run?
I think it's absolutely critical. In fact, you're speaking to a guy that doesn't do what we're doing right now ever in the day. I don't sit. I've had my desk modified in my office, so everything's at waist level. I have no chair in my office, so I'm standing on my feet all day long. I'm bouncing up and down on my toes. Also, I'm in my socks. When I get to the office, I'm basically walking around barefoot, so you're conditioning your feet as well. People say, aren't you exhausted after standing all day? The reality is I used to be exhausted sitting at a desk in front of a computer. Yeah. Now I'm standing. I do all my writing, my voicemails, my conference calls while I'm standing up. I have a push-up mat and a sit-up mat and a pull-up bar in my office. Throughout the day, I'm continually cycling through sets of pull-ups, push-ups, and sit-ups for cross-training. So I really think cross-training is a valuable tool. I say, don't sit down, people. We weren't engineered to sit down a lot. So have your office retooled at waist level and do it. You know, that's a great way just to get a lot of conditioning. You're kind of multitasking and perform better as well.
Dean Karnesses, his new book, by the way, is called Run, 26.2 Stories of Blisters and Bliss. And if you want to stand up for the rest of the program, you can take off your shoes and do
we're
that.
We're both going running after this, right? Yeah, save it for that, yeah.
Let's go next to Vicki in San Francisco. Vicki, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
My husband started doing half marathons through Team and Training when his sister contracted leukemia. And we have two daughters, and he got my elder daughter interested in running with him by starting to do water stops with Team and Training. And then she wanted to start training for a half marathon with him when she was 11. And my concern I think we really limited how much she could run because we were worried about her still growing and how mm-hmm. much is healthy mm-hmm. for a young girl to start running. And now my younger daughter, who is 11, is starting to get interested in running again. Now we are with him and doing, she wants to do a 5K, which I think is a fine distance to start with. But my concern is if she wants to get more into this, we might have limited our older daughter a bit much by saying, no, you can't run as much. So what's a good distance for kids about 11 or 12 to start participating in running?
Okay. Anthony Luke?
Yeah. You know, the question about how much young people should run is something that we're trying to figure out in sports medicine now. Some races only allow kids to participate if they're 18, but other ones actually allow them, and there's more young people doing it. So I think physiologically, young people can run the marathon. I think one thing is, you know, how much at the age 11, 12, they are still growing. So as we've discussed, there's a long training process that needs to go on to be able to accomplish these distances. So it's that total volume that could have some concern. And one thing you always have to remember for young girls compared to boys, you know, their endocrinological health, like their hormone levels and things like that, can get affected with a lot of exercise. And that's one thing you got to be a little more careful with the young female runners.
Anthony Luke joining us this hour along with Dean Karnassus as we continue to take your questions, concerns, calls, stories about what it means to run. Here's some emails coming in. Jason writes, I run 5 to 8 miles every other day. I regularly have people regale me about reports about the joys and pleasures of running. Those people are never runners. For myself, I run for health and appearance. I enjoy a nice sunset and listening to music, but I don't really enjoy running. Thanks for that dose of reality, Jason. Anyone considering training for a marathon, Francine writes in, should discuss what's involved at length with their partner before committing, especially if the trainee is working full-time. Marathon training is a very solo activity that does require many, many hours a week, special food, recovery, and can cause some problems by isolating the person from their family. Dean, comment on that?
It's an interesting comment because in my book, I actually have a chapter written by my wife. Because people always say, I got to interview your wife. I mean, she's not a runner. I mean, she runs if she's being chased by hornets, but she doesn't run at all. And what I've seen, I think you probably have seen this as well, is that a marathon is a great polarizer. It either brings people together or it tears them apart. I mean, I've seen relationships and marriages, you know, blown apart because one spouse got into running. Conversely, I've seen people and families grow closer just with one individual in the family who gets into running. It brings the entire family together. So it can go either way. It's very polarizing.
It's interesting. People ask me often, what do you think about when you're running? And my answer is I don't think about anything. I think about what I'm doing. I'm thinking about this mile. I'm thinking about keeping it to the pace I want. I'm thinking about the next step sometimes, not even the next mile. And I find that completely fulfilling, as odd as that sounds. I don't think about anything. I don't think about work. I don't even think about family. I think about what I am at that moment.
Hey, I couldn't agree more. I mean, we are so bombarded with constant stimulation in our world, and we're never actually in our own thoughts for long. And running is a time you can just go out. For me, I just like digesting, you know, the events of the day and putting some sense and relevance into it. And you can think about whatever you want. It's your time to think for yourself. We don't get a whole lot of that these days.
To Mike in San Jose. Mike, you're on.
Hi. My name is Mike, and I have done 2 New York marathons and 3 San Francisco marathons. The last marathon I did, I completed after recovering from a shattered femur. I have to say, marathon running, you don't get the cardio benefits you get with, say, biking, but the long distance makes it a great sport with a lot of drama, and finishing is a real rush. Mm-hmm. There are lots of local great races, and I guess finally, as they say, pain is inevitable. Suffering is optional.
Mike, thank you. Let's hear from Kevin, who also wants to talk about why he runs. Kevin, go ahead.
Hey, good morning. morning. Hey, yeah, my name's Kevin Jones. I've been running marathons about 40, since I started 40 about 10 years ago. One thing I wanted to bring up about the community aspect, I grew up in the Los Angeles area, South Central, you know, 60s and 70. And the one thing is, I noticed in the LA Marathon, it's just amazing how the entire city just comes together. Everyone's so excited. I've been living here in San Francisco now for like 16 years, so but I make a point every year I go home to run the marathon just to get that feeling, quite honestly, that I didn't get growing up. Have progressed now to, this will be my third 50K next December 5th, right, Gene? Because you just get to a point to where, man, I got to push myself a little bit more. You need another challenge. But it's just exciting. It's healthy. The one thing about the knee thing is interesting. I've been, over the years, everyone's telling me my knees are going to fall out. My knees are going to fall out. But the only people I've seen needing operations are those who don't move. And it's just been like, wow, they're falling off the boat.
Kevin,
but
thanks.
Looking forward to seeing you next month there, Dean.
See you
okay.
there, Kevin.
All right.
Yep.
Thanks, Kevin. One of the fun aspects of the community aspects of running in a marathon is there are these great signs, and I have two favorites. One was a guy holding up a sign for all us old scraggly runners approaching mile 20 or so that said, "You're all Kenyans today." And my other favorite was about a mile later, similar group of scraggly old runners tromping along. And the sign read, "This is the worst parade I've ever seen."
I saw one in New York that I'll never forget. It was a young woman standing on the side of the road, and she had a sign that said, "I am Bill's athletic supporter."
Alexis in Oakland, you're next. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to call, and I'm a teacher in Oakland Public High School, and I wanted to get back to the obesity epidemic amongst students and encouraging them to run. But I do want to say that one thing that I kind of pains me hearing, listening to this, is kind of speaking from a place of privilege, and this idea that these extreme methods of exercise are a deterrent for a lot of these students. And I'm not sure it's the best way to encourage them to do so. They're under a lot of pressure and asked to do a lot of extreme things. You've got to get your grades up. You've got to go to college. You need to be the first to do this and this and this and this. And then to add this sort of, it's actually not good enough just to sort of run, but we want you to aspire to run marathons and 5Ks and do these things. It's just everything's an extreme.
Yeah.
And I will say that one thing to encourage students is to try to take the extremity out of it and make it a little bit more normalized.
Yeah, fair enough. Good point, Alexis. Yeah. Thank you.
I can comment a little bit on that one.
Yeah. Anthony, go ahead.
I work with the San Francisco Unified School District. We have a PlaySafe program where we provide sports medicine services to the schools here, and we also help out with the private schools as well. But I think the whole point is giving people opportunity. And sometimes, you know, we can – I think youth sports have changed a lot over the last couple of decades in the sense that, you know, you don't get kids doing free play or doing whatever they want now, just safety and environments, or, you know, you just can't have kids running around in the city on their own. But it's trying to organize and give kids the opportunity to exercise, which is the big thing, and that'll kind of get them stimulated to do that as they grow older.
Here's a comment from Matt who writes in, "Running saved my life. I was struggling with alcoholism, depression, and running, specifically running marathons, really saved my life. I've been sober for 10 years, and during that time, I've run 12 marathons. Thanks for encouraging people to run. How can we get more people out there running? Also, we should have a marathon from San Jose to San Francisco." Matt, thanks for the comment. Comment on our website, "Could it be that running's power comes over us from the notion that it's a primal physical activity? Our ancestors ran to get to various places and to survive. Could it be that we're built to run and we should support those who are good at it?" And Adam writes in, "What are the physiological and neurological benefits of running? I've heard that running boosts the growth factors of neurons in the adult brain. Is that true? P.S. Running is the best time to listen to the Forum podcast." Thanks, Adam.
Especially this one, yeah.
Anthony, can you chime in on that? Neurological benefits to running, boost of growth factors and other things?
Yeah, many people, as we've been having them talk about their running, have talked about this rush. And when you think about it, when you're running, you're putting a stress on your body, and then the hormone levels do change, and then endorphins kick in. And that's one of the most powerful kind of signals in your body. Like, you can decrease pain with endorphins. You can get a runner's high. And that's kind of why people who run and run regularly, they can't live without it once they get there. So, you know, there's definitely a lot of physiologic changes and benefits that go on kind of psychologically and physically.
I know from my experience and in reading about research with Parkinson's disease that there's a lot of research and science now that seems to suggest that running not only affects the body, but it affects the brain. Can you talk about that some, what's going on with that, Anthony Luke, about the fact that the brain is plastic and that running may have this boost in affecting the way in which our brains are actually wired?
Yeah, well, I think when you think about the brain, it's an organ and it's got to be worked just like anything else, just like a muscle would need to be. And if you don't use it, then it's not going to grow, it's not going to improve. And so, you know, putting yourself in stressful situations, whether it's you're doing Sudoku or a video game or running, it makes you use your brain. And if you don't use it, you're going to lose it. So that's very important. And people know that you make people do tasks, whether it's running or something like a crossword puzzle or whatever, you're going to stimulate use of the brain, and that'll help the neurotransmitters improve and then get your brain to get better.
How do you think, Dean Karnazes, running has changed who you are?
Well, it's become my life, which I feel like the luckiest guy on earth, because I'm, you know, doing what I actually love to do. But I think it's made me a better person. It's humbleized me. It's shown me that great struggle comes at a price. That there is no easy road to success. You have to really be dedicated and motivated. It's also taught me to appreciate others more. I've seen them struggle. We've struggled together. I've certainly won races, and I've dropped out of races. So it's very humbleizing, and I think as a person, it just gives you a little more maturity. The other thing that I think is that it just gives you time to think to yourself. Most of the day, I found I was just processing information that was coming to me. I was never actually independent to think on my own. I was taking in, you know, traffic signs or billboards or listening to the radio. When I run, as you found, you're just free to let your mind go where it will. And I think that makes you a better person fundamentally.
Back to our calls. Richard in San Francisco is next. Richard, go ahead.
Hi. First off, I just want to say thanks to Dean. Dean, you're a great inspiration. I'm going to run the CIM in a few weeks, and it's going to be my, I believe, 116th marathon, give or take one or two. And my question is, it probably would have been my 117th, but I guess there was no Silicon Valley Marathon this year. And I want to know what happened with that, and are we going to have one next year?
It was the Dean Karnazes Silicon Valley Marathon, and it's going to come back, and it's going to be better. I promise you that. So thank you for that very nice plug, and good luck at CIM. That's a very fast race.
That's the Danny Bringer, who's a runner, and our engineer was just telling me over my headsets that's Sacramento.
Sacramento, coming up very shortly, December, what is it, the 5th? And a lot of people, that's their PR course. How many times have you run CIM?
Oh, about 5 or 6 times, I think. I have an outside shot at getting back under 4 hours again this time, so I'll shoot for that.
All right, Richard. Thanks. Thanks for the call. Let's get a practical question in from Jeff in Belchertown, Massachusetts. Jeff?
Hi. I just want to first say thanks to Dean. I enjoyed reading his book, 50-50. Matter of fact, I listened to it while I was running, and it has inspired me to complete 50 marathons in 50 states by the time I turn 50. Just getting started this year, I ran 3 marathons. My last one was the Marine Corps Marathon. And these last 3 marathons, between miles 16 and 17, both calves was in my legs, just excruciating pain. And I want to know what I can do about it. Do I need to run more, less? Should I strength train my legs? I kind of like Dean's idea of working standing up. I've been thinking about how to rearrange my office, seeing if that would help. And I'm interested
okay.
to hear what Dean and the doctor
yeah,
have to say, and I'll take
let's
my
get,
comments off the air.
Thanks, Jeff. Quick comments from each of you. Dean first, and
sure.
then Dr. Luke.
You know, a couple quick thoughts. I've noticed that your feet typically swell around that distance, and sometimes if your forefoot is held too narrow in your shoes, it can put extra pressure on your calves and cause an unnatural gait. So perhaps look at loosening, it's something as simple as loosening your shoestrings around that mile to give your foot some room to expand.
And Dr. Luke?
Yeah, you know, if I had seen you in clinic or something like that, the questions that would go through my head are, did anything change in your training program? Because it's happening on both sides, and you're an experienced runner. So why it's coming on now, you'd think about, is there different loads that you're applying? Did you make any change in your shoes or footwear or your training surfaces? Because it just seems like it's happening now, but didn't happen before. So be trying to look at those risk factors and identifying them.
Last web comment I want to read. This person writes in, I hate running, but last year when I was in the throes of a very intense master's program, I became good friends with two devoted runners who recruited me on their weekly runs. I was proud of myself for making it to 5 miles, but I could and would never have been able to do it on my own. Although running is an intensely solo activity, I can only do it with people around me. I think it's a good point because there, whether you run with others or you feed off of the support that you receive from others, there is something about that experience that it's oddly solo and communal both.
Yeah, I think, you know, again, listen to everyone, follow no one. Some people really like the communal aspect and certainly a sense of camaraderie when you're both suffering together. I mean, you know, misery loves company, right? And it brings people closer together. Other times, people like myself just like to run by myself most of the time. I still enjoy being around others, but most of the time I like to run by myself, and that's just who I am. I have friends that love to run, and they really like the group element. They're in a running group. They like the club. They rarely run on their own. It's what they enjoy. So do what you love.
And Dr. Anthony Luca, last observation from you about the resources that are available at your RunSafe program and at UCSF if people want to explore this kind of venture but want to explore it in a way that's going to be safe for them.
Sure. I think one thing is running is, as Dean said, an individual thing. Everyone's got different expectations or looking for getting different things out of it. And you can't put everybody in, like, you got to train this way and that'll be the exact formula for getting those goals. Everyone is an individual, and so getting the right knowledge is important. Like for the RunSafe clinic, we really look at looking at people's gait and then strength and flexibility. Are they using the right equipment, including shoes? And then very importantly, are they eating the right things, putting the right fuel in the tank?
And we'll have to pick up on that topic, I'm afraid, another time because we're out of time. It's an important aspect of this question as well. Dr. Anthony Luke, thank you. Dean Karnazes, thanks as always. Keep running, everyone. I'm Dave Iverson. This is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.